Mr. David Bass, real one. When and where were you born, Mr. Bass?
I was born in Nottingham in 1933.
What date in
27th of January, my actual birth date. 27th of January, 1933.
And what did your parents do for a living?
Well, my father was working for the cigarette factory Players Cigarettes in Nottingham. My mother, she called herself a housewife, stayed at home looking after the children, which was myself and a younger sister.
And what was Nottingham like while you were growing up?
We were in an area called Forest Fields, and from the name it implied that at one time it had been a forested area with fields, but it was, by the time I was born, it was mainly terraced housing, rows and rows of terraced houses and streets.
And whereabouts did you go to school? What school did you go to?
Well, first of all, I started off at Stanley Road Junior Boys School, and then I took the 11 plus exam, and then started my secondary education at the High Pavement Grammar School.
And did you have any particular favourite subjects or teachers at school?
I was always very interested in languages, English, studied a little German initially. I wasn't so hot on the sciences or the maths. Maths I didn't get on with at all. So by the time I took my school certificate exam, I was gratified to pass in German, quite a good pass in German, and at that age I could have left school, but I was asked if I'd like to stay on to study Russian. We had a teacher who had just returned from service in the Navy during the war, and he'd been on the Russian convoys and had learned Russian, taught himself, I suppose. And when he came back to the school, he was very keen to introduce Russian as a language in the school. And because I'd got a good pass in German, I was asked if I'd like to become part of the Russian set. And there were only three of us who were doing Russian, so I stayed on for a further 2 years at school doing Russian and German.
And going back a little bit for a moment, you'd have been quite young when it started out, but did the Second World War affect your young life much?
Yes, I was 6 years old when the Second World War started. I can remember, actually, I know a lot of people talk about the radio broadcast of the Prime Minister saying that war had been declared. The week previous to that, I had been on holiday with my aunt and uncle and cousin. And we came back on the Saturday, and I can remember on the Sunday morning, my cousin and I were playing upstairs, and our parents called us down to listen to the wireless because the Prime Minister was going to make an important announcement. And the important announcement was, of course, that Britain was at war with Germany. And my cousin and I, we were quite excited because war meant playing with toy soldiers on the kitchen table. And the parents were very grim. They were quite shocked and that. I seem to remember one of them said, "Well, that's it," with a sort of air of finality. During the early part of the war, I suppose we were affected at school in as much as there was a lot of feeling that we were going to be bombed at any moment, and of course large groupings of people were vulnerable. So for some time we had our lessons in private homes of the teachers, and that's where I can remember learning how to read and write, first of all, around a gas fire in the school teacher's front room. And then as the war proceeded and we realised that air raid shelters had been built, and if there was an air raid while we were at school, we would be looked after, and not in the air raid shelters. Things sort of settled down. Nottingham itself was bombed on occasions, but not as bad as places like Coventry or London, of course. Other things I remember, going to school and seeing the vapour trails high up in the sky, crisscrossing, obviously. Dogfights, perhaps, between fighter planes, because of the way the trails weaved in and out and that. But it was not concerning us, really. I suppose we were at that age where we didn't realise the implications or the problems that it was creating. But the main effect, I think, on my own personal life was the fact that my father was called up. He went into the Air Force. My mother, sister and I, we went for a holiday in Blackpool, which was his embarkation holiday. He was at a camp not far from Blackpool. So that was the last time we saw him before he was shipped off to the Middle East. And it was 4 years later when he came back from the war. It was demobbed, and by then I was a young teenager. So I'd missed my father through the formative years from age of 8 up to 12, I suppose.
Did he settle well back into the family and civilian life?
Well, I suppose so. At that age, one didn't really question one's parents. But yes, he went back to work at Players, the cigarette manufacturers, and he never really spoke about it. Had one or two photographs he brought back from service in the Middle East. He'd been in Palestine, as it was in those days, and then through into Egypt. He was in a unit that was repairing aircraft, so they were always sort of following up as the war moved, as the troops moved. They followed up, reclaiming downed planes, repairing them and getting them back into the air again. So he was an aircraft fitter. I think perhaps it... The influence he had on me was when it came my turn to be called up for national service, he suggested that I should try the Air Force, which I did.
So during the war, did you have a shelter at home?
Yes, we did. Yes, we were living in a semi-detached house. And the two houses, both had basement cellars, and the cellars were reinforced. I suppose the council did it. I mean, I can't really remember how it all happened, but the cellars were reinforced. It was rather like a very strong steel cage that was built within the cellar, so there was a gap between the cage itself and the ceiling of the cellar and the floor above, and there was a communicating door so that the two families during an air raid could go from one house to another, and spent time in the shelters. And the family next door, they had a girl about the same age as I was, and we had to do our party pieces, reciting poems and things that we'd learnt at school. So she and I had to provide the entertainment, shall we say, while the air raids were going on above. On one particular night, I do remember being taken upstairs to look out from one of the bedroom windows to the south of Nottingham, where the sky was a bright red, and I was told that that was a factory that had been hit and was going up in flames. But again, it didn't really impinge. It was just accepting what parents and and grown-ups told you about the war and what was happening around. I think at that age, children were far more interested in the excitement of the thing, without realising the consequences of the fact that people were dying.
And did you have a shelter at school as well?
Yes.
What was that like?
Yes, we had a shelter. It was out in the playground. It was a brick-built shelter with a concrete slab roof, and we used to troop in there when, if the air raid warning went while we were at school, we had to troop into the shelters class by class. And also there, pupils were encouraged to do a little party piece or recite something. And that. So in a way, there was a community spirit brought about by the fact that enemy planes were flying overhead and bombs were dropping around. But as I say, there didn't seem to be very much death and destruction around. One heard of it in other places, and names like Sheffield, Coventry, London were just names to a pre-teenage child. They were just names of places somewhere in England. I do remember a teacher saying that whenever there was an air raid, if we listened carefully to the BBC, the day after we would be told that bombs had been dropped at random. And of course, to our young minds, we thought random was a place. And so random was being targeted day after day. Bombed to obliteration.
Did you follow the progress of the war at all?
I seem to remember there was a magazine. I don't know how often it came out, but there was a magazine that was produced. I think it was called The War Illustrated. And there used to be black and white photographs and articles about things that were happening. But of course, it was things that had happened. It was all past history, in as much as it was stuff that had happened a year or so previously. So there was never any up-to-date news. The only up-to-date news, really, we got from the cinemas, because whenever you went to the cinema, there'd be two films, the main feature and then a secondary film, but they always included a newsreel. And so a lot of the up-to-date, as far as they could be up-to-date, the up-to-date news, and that came to you through the newsreel films.
And did rationing affect your life much?
Sorry?
The rationing effect.
Rationing, well, there again, yes, I suppose it did. Families were rationed, and we all had our ration books. I do seem to remember that things like eggs, cheese were scarce. fruit, certain fruits, well, oranges and bananas became non-existent. We didn't see oranges and bananas. But there again, I think a lot of families, it was the parents, the adults, that were sacrificing for the sake of children, so that the children were well fed. I suppose what you've never had, you never miss. And so for some of the children, they didn't know what they were missing. And as regards sweets and chocolates, they just disappeared. But there again, we didn't crave it because our short memories, we'd forgotten really what the taste of chocolate or sweets was.
And so, do you have any other particular memories or stories of your experiences during the Second World War?
It's hard looking back because it's a part of life which was very important while you were living through it. But as soon as the war ended, and began to move on, and by that time I was in my teens and thinking about a future career, the past slipped away. It is only certain memories that stand out vividly, but you don't have that sort of feeling of continuity, as though, right, so this happened and then we went on to something else. It's just the odd incidences that seem to be uppermost in one's mind when looking back. I think the most important time of my life, really, from career point of view, came when I did have to join up and go for national service. As I say, I decided to opt for the Royal Air Force. And another thing my father had said was, national service initially at that stage was for 2 years. And you had no choice, really. If you did national service, you had no choice as to what you were going to do. But I can remember my father saying, if you are prepared to sign on for 3 years as a regular, then you can pick and choose. Now, how much of that was true or how much was wishful thinking, I don't know. But when I was called up, and I went to the initial training at RAF Cardington, Bedford. I did say that I was interested in becoming a regular, and I was prepared to sign on for 3 years. And when they looked at my school record, the fact that I had done German and also 2 years Russian, they said, oh, you're interested in languages. And I said, yes. They said, we are running a Russian course. And I thought, oh, this is good. But unfortunately, it's full. However, we are thinking of initiating a Chinese course. We're starting up a Chinese course. Would you be interested in Chinese? And of course I thought, well, yes, I'd be interested in anything. My father's words were ringing in my mind. If you're a regular, you can pick and choose. And here I was being given a choice. I said, yes, I'd be very interested in Chinese. So we were told that they were selecting for Cantonese, and they gave us an aptitude test. First we went into a room one by one, and an officer pronounced certain syllables, and we had to mimic his voice. And he was making such peculiar sounds, and we were having to mimic and respond. So I suppose that was a test to see whether we had an ear for the Chinese tonal language. And then one of the other tests was that we were given a sheet of paper on which a Chinese character had been written. Simple character, perhaps only two strokes or three strokes. And we had to look at this for about 30 seconds. And then the paper was taken away and we had to then write it on another sheet of paper. Then we were given another character with a few more strokes and memorised that and then transcribed that on the paper. And then it progressed until they were quite complicated characters. And one of the characters I do remember was the character Su, which means book. And to me, it looked very much like a Christmas tree standing in its tub. And I counted all the horizontal lines and then the vertical line coming down and the square at the bottom with the line across. And so I was imagining in my mind a Christmas tree and doing it in a stylized representation. I forget how many strokes there are altogether in this word for book, but it looks quite complicated. Well, it did, particularly on first seeing it. Those two tests, the sort of tonal test and the transcription of words, meant that I was one of six people who were selected for a Cantonese course. The six eventually was cut to four of us, and so four of us went through Cantonese. The course was at the School of Oriental and African Studies.
Did you go straight from school into the National Service?
Yes, I left school at 18. And
what date was it?
That'd be 1951. September, I think it was. September 1951. Yes, September 1951 was the call-up. And the aptitude tests were done at RAF Cardington. The course...
How did you feel about doing National Service?
Well, it was one of those things that you had to do. It was something that you couldn't avoid. The only way you could defer it or postpone it was if you were going to do a university course. But most people would rather get their National Service out of the way and then go on to their university courses. And at that time, I suppose I was thinking in terms of going on to university to study Russian. But with National Service coming up, I thought, well, I'll get through the National Service first, and then the opportunity of studying Russian at university later will come after that. But that was completely put aside when I was given this option of studying Chinese.
And so you were called up, went to Cardington, and you were put onto this Cantonese course. Did you have a period of basic training before that started?
There was a period of basic training. I can't remember how long it was. I had a feeling it was either 6 or 8 weeks, but the other fellows and myself that had been chosen for this Cantonese course, we only did about 3 weeks basic training, because we had to be at the School of Oriental and African Studies to begin our Cantonese course. And that began in October. So we were We were taken from our basic training without ever having passed out to RAF Uxbridge. We were posted to RAF Uxbridge, where we were going to be stationed, and from there we travelled in each day to Russell Square, where the SOAS School of Oriental and African Studies was.
How did you get from Uxbridge to?
On the Piccadilly line. This was one of the perks of the job, I suppose. We were allowed. We had to wear civilian clothes for this course. So we wore civilian clothes. We travelled on the Piccadilly line on season tickets that were provided by the Air Force. So that was great. We were given what they called a subsistence allowance of 1 6d a day to provide a midday meal and other refreshments. 1 6d. I was just trying to equate that with the current money. It's about 7.5d. Well, we don't use half pence anymore, do we? 7 or 8d. And yet, for 1 6d, we could buy a substantial meal in the university canteen and still come away with some change in our pockets. So we were doing pretty well. And we used to go in each day, 5 days a week. As I say, there were just four of us doing Cantonese, but there were more that had been selected to learn Mandarin, and they were also being instructed at SOAS. So there were quite a crowd of us that would go in each day. But for the four of us that were doing Cantonese, it seemed a very select group because, you know, most of our instruction, and that was through tutorials with some of the top-ranking professors of Chinese. So we were very privileged.
So, yeah,